handle the heat. Yeah. You can and you can handle the heat. Yeah. Out of system, you can handle the heat.
Booyakasha! Welcome back to another episode of If You Can't Handle the Heat. I'm here with Joe, Micah, boys. How we doing?
Buka shaka.
Booyaka shaka.
Gage, where is that from? Where the hell is that
from? If you've been listening, and Joe, how we doing, Joe? But if you've been listening to the past couple shows and you've seen some very unique openings, it's because I've been watching a lot of the Ali G show. So if you watch the Ali G show, you'll totally understand where I'm coming from with all these. But if not, you probably just think I'm a crackhead. We got a lot of stuff to talk about today.
So a little bit of both. Can't be wrong.
So we're going to be talking about, well, first off, I'm going to start off with talking about the new Stan Sheriff name, the Simplify Bank of America, Bank of Hawaii Stan Sheriff Center. And then we're going to get into, last week we got into how do you handle losses. Now we're going to get into how do you handle wins. And then to end it up, we're going to talk about what it's like being a pro athlete, the kind of the lifestyle and what you kind of have to understand when you're going into that field of expertise. But first, like I said, I want to give a little rundown of what's happening with the Stan Sheriff Center. So for those of you who don't know what the Stan Sheriff Center is, it's where we play. It's very, very famous. It's in the just history of men's volleyball. Probably one of the greatest places to play in the world for volleyball, men's or women's. University of Hawaii, again, we play there, men's and women's. And lately, did you see this, Micah? I know Joe saw about a week ago they changed their name to this big board there now at the Stan Sheriff Center. It's called the Simplify Arena, and then there's a Bank of Hawaii because they're the ones that kind of sponsored it, and then at the Stan Sheriff Center, like literally the at sign. I'm like, wait, yeah. What? That makes no sense. The arena at the center. So then I was thinking, okay, when I saw it, I was shocked. I'm being honest. I was not loving it when I saw it. I was like, what? Like, that makes no sense. But then I got thinking. I was like, all right, it's a coronavirus. They need money. They need all these things to kind of help them out through a lot of this. So it turns out that they got around like $5 million for that. Bank of America paid $5 million to put that sign up there, change the name, and then they're also giving out
$100,000. Is it $5 million? Is it $5 million a year?
Really? That would be news to me.
Well, dude, because $5 million for 10 years is actually not that much if you think about it for getting their name on an arena such as the Stan Sheriff Center.
That's true.
I saw that, I'm like, $5 million is actually maybe like for the short term, but for a 10-year deal, that's pretty cheap, I would
say.
That's
actually a good point. Yeah, that's 500 grand a year.
That's not much for the amount of advertising they're getting.
For the Stan Share Center, dude?
Yeah.
Maybe we're desperate.
Every single match, that's the thing that's flashed. Like, when you go Spectrum Sports, which is the channel at UH that plays all the university games.
That's huge.
Every game, they show that sign all the time. Anybody who's walking into the arena sees that sign all the time.
There's basically, like, the Stan Sheriff Center and Aloha Stadium. I feel like that's like it.
I think that's gonna be RIP soon. Is it really? I keep seeing more and more
Aloha Stadium, our football articles. Stadium, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But that's pretty cheap. For an arena of that caliber,
that's
really
a good
cheap
play
for a 10
by
year
Bank
deal.
Of Hawaii. But why'd they name it Simplify?
Maybe it's their new program?
I've seen it before. I've seen that like logo before somewhere. I'm like, I forget where. I didn't think it was Bank of Hawaii, but it is. I don't know. It's not very simple.
Bank of Hawaii.
I'm gonna be honest. I don't think anyone's really gonna call it the Simplify Stan
Sheriff.
Yeah,
I was gonna say.
You know what I'm saying?
Say
but they do have the publicity. Dude, I mean, the announcers have to call it that. Everyone who's getting paid has to call it that. So now they're saying it. It's going to be recognized from everywhere now. So they are getting a lot
Simplify
of publicity.
Simplify Arena by the Bank of Hawaii at the Stan Sheriff Center.
they're going to call it the Simplify Arena at the Stan Sheriff Center. They're going to leave that Bank of America out of it. But they have their logo on it. You can see. You can go look up pictures of it. You can see.
No, I seen the picture of it on Rob DeMello's thing.
Yeah, but, bro, with it being that cheap, out of system, we could have invested in that, bro.
Out of system, the out of system,
out of system,
at the Stan Sheriff Center.
At the stairs, my God, Stan Sheriff Center. Oh my word, that would be absolutely ridiculous. That would be the biggest baller move ever done if Gage is playing in his own arena and in college.
Yeah. This is my arena.
Yeah,
guys, make sure you clean up tonight. Make sure you clean up, boys.
Yeah, that would be incredible.
Just making all the calling all the shots. Oh, calling the shots. Fat shot out there. But yeah, I mean, so at first I was like, all right, I don't know. I was kind of mad, but then I kind of realized, I put myself in their shoes. I'm like, dude, I mean, they need money, right? And that money goes to us. So I can, how can I be? You know, they're just out here making.
That's
money
like a those. 1 year fix, though, bro. That's like a 1 year fix. $5 million is, well, not that
also,
much money when you're talking about
the
athletic department.
Because isn't the Stan Sheriff Center? Isn't it?
I thought
is
it was our
owned
AD.
By UH, or it's, isn't it?
No,
I think it's privately
not.
Owned, right? It's
it
by
is.
The Sheriff family. So
Rich
I
Sheriff.
Think they would, yeah, they would, yeah. And they would have to make that decision. How did
that's
UH
why,
get involved in that?
Yeah. That's why Stan Sheriff's, I don't know the terms of the deal. That's but when I first saw it, I'm like, the only reason Stan Sheriff Center is still there is because the fact the Sheriffs, I still think, own a majority of the Stan Sheriffs or that place in that arena. And so like, we're not getting rid of the Stan Sheriff name, and maybe UH is like, the only way that we need money, and they had to like bargain, and I'm gonna guess the
yeah.
Sheriff families said something like, as long as our name stays, then we can do it. So they came up with that long ass name, and that's kind of what you're
yeah,
dealt with.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, but I don't
that's
think
what
they're
I would
gonna
guess.
I don't think they'd ever change the name. Then people would be pissed off.
Yeah, that's not pissed true off. You can't do that.
No, not at all.
But change comes. I mean, like, I think my dad played in Clum Gym, so, I mean, it wasn't like they were always playing in the Sheriff Center, Stan Sheriff Center.
That's true. I heard they got packed, and there was, like, cockroaches flying around and whatnot, just craziness.
Yeah.
Those listening, Clum Gym is, like, the
dude,
old,
oh
old big
gosh.
Gym that's, like, hot, has holes in it, and is huge, and no one really used it anymore except, like, the intramurals, and that's where
that
the
place
old,
is
the old
legendary.
Used to play.
My yeah. uncle got kicked out of the, I think he can't even go, he wasn't allowed in there at all anymore.
Why?
Like to watch my, he would bring in, he's Tahitian, and he would bring in like his own like drums, and he would be his own band, and it got out of hand.
It was
so funny. My dad's like, yeah, Uncle Branscombe, like he came to like three games and he never could come to another game.
That's,
he would just like take over, like the UH band is trying to play, and he's like, "Nah, I want to play a different song." That's so funny.
But like 3 8 producers, just horrible too. Just not even in tune or anything.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's like, "Dude, is this guy, like, is anyone hiring this guy or like?" Oh
man. So we'll see what I mean. I don't think it's gonna be really big, that big of a difference, but I don't know. Maybe some people will go on a rant about it, but that's about it. I mean, they're still
big
the
news,
Sheriff.
Though. Still big news.
Still big news. Still big news.
For the Hawaii volleyball community, that's big news.
Oh yeah, big time. Well, I mean, like I said, nationwide. I mean, Stan Sheriff, everyone knows it.
Yeah, yeah, that's true too.
All right, well, Joe, we're gonna move on to our next subject here. We talked about how to deal with failure. Now let's talk about how we deal with winning.
Hashtag winning.
Charlie Sheen. Great. If you haven't watched that interview, make sure you guys check it out. Are you bipolar? He's like, no, but I'm bi winning. Great. My all-time favorite.
So that's a good turning point into the main topic for today. We get asked this a lot, actually, because people – it seems like a lot of people – I don't know. Anybody who DMs us – is always talking about like teammates. Like when we ask for advice and stuff or things that people want advice on, it's always about like teammates acting cocky and stuff. And so I'm going to guess a lot of people, they have interesting cultures that listen to this. I don't know. I mean, all the DMs are always about like team, like crazy stories about teammates. So for us, I think we've all been on like a decent amount of pretty successful teams. But I think you really learn what's special when you're on teams that aren't successful. For me, that's when it's really apparent, like what's special about a winning team and what about a winning culture. I'm gonna throw it over to Gage actually here first, because I think Gage has experienced a crazy range of teams from like
oh, yeah.
super successful, the like lost in big match, super successful that won in big matches, just really bad team. Like
really Gage, bad teams that never been in a big match. You name it, I'm there.
So Gage, I mean, for you, what is like the biggest thing I would say that you wouldn't think is like obvious about successful cultures and just winning and being in a winning program?
Are you talking about how they get successful? Are you talking about like off the court? Or are you saying
what makes them successful? Yeah. What makes them successful? Not being like once you are on that team, like what exactly do you set? Like you can feel like it's there's special things I think, and I'll get into what I think, but I want to hear your viewpoint first.
I don't know if I'm going to answer this question exactly how you think I am, but I'm going to start with kind of on the court, and I would say steadiness, right? So when you're successful
consistency.
Culture, consistent, yeah, steady consistency. But when you're on the court, right, there's always like a steadiness, consistency, and confidence that you guys are going to win, right? And I always thought, okay, we can definitely win this game, right, no matter how bad my team was. Like I was trying to push us to win the game and everything. And luckily, a lot of times I did, but there's definitely some times that I didn't. And for example, dude, it can be super brutal, right? For like, if you're on a successful team, you're not going back to the service line being like, if I don't get an ace here at 7-9, we're losing this game. Like, here's the thing. I would go back to the service line, and I'd be like, if you miss a serve, it's literally not even double digits. I was like, if you miss a serve, there's a high chance we are not winning this game right now. But if you don't get a point off your serve, there's another chance that you're not winning this point anymore. They're not winning this game anymore. So it's basically, I'm like, didn't get a point. I'm like, oh, well, we lost.
Yeah.
Match is over.
Dude, I would literally be like, okay, because then I'm in the back row, right? Because I was hitter, right? And so it would be like, okay, you gotta make sure, like, you rush to the front row. You gotta get 3 points real quick and get up to that front row as fast as possible. My team had different plans, so when you're successful,
they like to take their time when you're in the back row.
Yeah, they're like, okay, he's back there. I mean, he played libero. He's chilling back there. Let's just not even block.
Gage likes it back there. Gage loves it in the back row.
No, man, but when you're in a successful team culture. But here's a beautiful thing. Can I say a beautiful thing about not being maybe in a big successful culture, Joe? I want to say this. When you're a team, and like for example, it was my 18s year. I played 3 18s year, but my last 18s year when I was a true 18. Something beautiful that can come out of it when you're not in a there's multiple things, but something as a team is we still have pretty decent players, right? And I remember we played in a big tournament in Southern California. We placed like fifth, right? Like a really big tournament. We were all just like kind of shocked. But when you have that, when you're finally playing good together in a big tournament, there's like no greater feel of camaraderie towards it. And that's when you feel, okay, we felt like we're successful. And that's how it feels, right? There's a camaraderie to it. Right before, when you're not successful, it's just like oh, fuck, errors, runs, all this other stuff. Like you're like,
well, I think the runs are magnified when the team goes on a run when you're on a losing culture.
Yeah.
It's just like,
oh yeah,
everything's magnified.
Damn it! It happens God every it. Year. You ever seen that? It happens every year, every game.
Michael, what about you? Like thing. What, Mike? Mike, you like?
Over. Huh?
I was gonna say that you were on like the most successful club team ever to exist. You're the most successful club volleyball player to ever live. What is the most? I mean, because at UCLA, I think you've explained it on this podcast before. It's like that you've had a couple years where you felt like was pretty good, but I feel like all three of us would say like, we weren't happy with every single year of our college year because we didn't win the national championship. I think at the bottom line, like that's 100% the goal every single year. Some people might define success a different way. And Gage has spoken about how he feels about my senior year and what he feels about how, like if he considers that a success or not. And I wanted to ask you, Michael, like what is the biggest thing? I know you were on one team for a significant amount of time, but I feel like when you went to UCLA, you realized the difference between that culture and that program versus your club team back in Hawaii.
Yeah, they couldn't be more different. Oh my gosh. You know, to Gage's point, that's a really, really like big part of it is that steadiness, and that confidence, like that you're just no matter what happens, like teams could go on like 10-point runs against you and you're just like, all right, like been here before. We'll just slowly climb our way back out of this and win and go home. And like, you just have this like sort of like confidence and this sort of like just calmness. And that's something that stands out a lot to me about, that club team that was so successful. Gosh, how many other differences are there? Focus, the ability to focus nowadays is so important. I think more now than ever, like being raised in this new environment, being able to focus for long periods of time is going to like be tremendously valuable.
Well, dude, I think it's the technology. Forward.
Right. No, right. Like, with
the technology is interrupted that.
ADHD coming through the roofs. Like, and even now, like I'll have to stop myself from like playing League of Legends on one computer, watching YouTube videos on my other computer, and then like having something open on my phone. And it's just like, we can't get enough stimuli. And so, yeah, just the ability to focus. That team could focus so well for such long periods of time that it would just kind of ride out the waves and keep going. So a lot of that steadiness is important. With the winning thing, what helped so much was that, one, what's helped me my whole life not be cocky is that I played with, like, Tui and Evan, and they're older than me and always better than me. So I never had any like problem being like, yeah, I'm not the star of this team. So that was really, really easy for me. I think it was really important for my upbringing to be under like their spotlights and like kind of in the shadows a little bit, as well as in football and basketball. Like I was okay at those sports, but I wasn't like the best at them. So I never had like my ego inflated or anything like that. At UCLA, obviously, I became a little bit bigger part of like the team's image, and that was a different process to me because I never had really had to do that before, especially on my own, without similar people like Tui and Evan, and like that Hawaii mindset's just so different. It's so just cruise, like everybody's cruising. We don't even have time to think that we're just like, oh yeah, okay, like we're just playing volleyball. We're just cruising, go home, chill, play league, go to the beach. Like, it's just a way different mindset than like LA, where everyone's trying to be a star and everyone's trying to one up everybody and all that kind of stuff. So that was a huge adjustment as well.
Right on. And Micah, the other thing I had was like, dude, I feel like at UCLA, there's such a pressure to win there. And now at the club that you're at, I feel like it's not the same type of pressure. What is the difference in playing for those two different outside kind of external forces? And then what is, and like when you're playing for like a team that has a lot of pressure, like why does that create so much more tension within a team, you think?
Oh, geez. Yeah, that's a good question. Okay, so I think when you're playing with, I think everyone can play well if they're confident and they're playing free. Like, everyone has the ability to play really well when they're feeling it, when everything's going good, when you don't have pressure, and when you can kind of do what you want and yet you're playing well. It's the really, really high-level athletes that can play under pressure really well when all the expectations are there and, like, the situations aren't that good and maybe they shanked the first ball or they started off bad. To me, that's what separates the good players. The veterans that can just night in and night out, whether they have it or not, whether they're feeling it or not, they can produce, they can win. And so I don't know where I got to that from, but that was something, the first thing that popped into mind when you were saying that, I was like, that is what makes special players. In those like down times, in those like we're down two sets and I like that player's been playing bad, if that player can come back somehow, like those are the games I'm the most proud of myself, is like when I'm like, damn, I started off really bad, and then like somehow worked my way back into the game and started producing and starting to make some good plays. But in terms of having external pressure on you to succeed, yeah, it's been a breath of fresh air to be here and for our president to be like, after we lose, be like, hey, you guys fought well. Like, that's like, I've never heard that. Like, you lose and they come in and like, yeah, we're proud of you guys. Like, you guys like put up a good fight. And I was just like, geez, like, we don't even need to win. We just need to try hard. And like, this is the easiest
thing. Participation award, baby. What'd you get?
Yeah.
Like, what's the best awards? Like, what's the best advice you've gotten about success and winning and dealing with success from somebody else?
Oh, wow.
Or that you've heard.
Oh, wow. I'm going to have to think about that. That's a good question.
Gage, what about you?
Yeah, you guys go first. That would help me.
I want to, after I answer this question, I want to talk about two things. Then I want to shift it to you, Joe. And you have answer these questions because you have a very unique view on these as well. Best advice? God, about success? I mean, I never really had anyone talk about, hey, like, I always just try and be like, yo, like, it can be, for example, this is one of the things I want to talk about. Like, I remember I went in the U.S. Like, I explain why. I've been on the U.S. agent for, like, 3 weeks, right, total. I go in, and I just go in, and it can be super. I go from, like, the man, right? Go from super successful culture. I'm hopping in the U.S. agent gym. Like, I know who's there. I'm not coming in there, like, thinking, oh, I'm, like, all this. But, like, in college, you know.
Dude, you're here?
But no. No. Like, what? Who are you, bro? Like, who are these guys? These guys are good.
These guys really come good. From? You don't play in college.
Be like, for walking the gym. So, John, when are we traveling? When am I going?
I'm ready to rock, coach. I'm ready to lead this team to a victory.
You can literally put me anywhere.
Gage, you're going to be on that far court and don't ever talk to me again.
I'll go. I remember walking into the USA gym and I was just like, just feeling so deflated, man. Cause I was like, it felt like it in college and stuff. And then you come in, I'm like, damn, like, damn it, man. I feel like a loser here. Like, I legit like was deflated. I felt like a loser. I was like, oh my gosh. So the best thing about success or anything is make sure you keep in mind that there's going to be other people out there who are much better than you and have been playing for a long time, especially if you want a career in volleyball. Guess what? All those guys are, what, like 27 to 30-some years old, right? So, and you're like, what? I walk in the gym, like 20 years old. Like, think, like, keep in mind that there's always going to be someone better. And then when that happens, just focus on yourself mainly, right? I remember it could get down on me, and I may not be answering this question fully, but I remember sometimes I can get really down on myself, and the person I talk to the most when I get down on myself when it comes to volleyball is my mom. And one thing she always said to me, she's like, Gage, like, you, like, that the way you're thinking right now and the way you're playing is not you, because you're playing for someone else, not yourself, right? When you're at a tryout, when you're at something else, the USA gym or any club or college team, trying to make a name for yourself, you're new in the scene, don't play for them. Just kind of, then you're not enjoying it. Then you're like, okay, I messed up. You can't think like that. Then you're going to mess up more or anything, right? And that's never how I've ever played. But think about it like, okay, you mess up, next ball. Play for yourself. Focus on having fun, enjoying yourself, because then you give me the loosest. And I still messed up a few times. Not a few times. I still messed up a significant amount of times when I played for myself. But that's part of volleyball. And that's why I know I'm playing my best. So when, if you're ever in that situation, don't play for anyone else. Just play for yourself. Play for the love of the sport. Play for enjoyment. And that's when you know you're going to reach how you're meant to play and how you usually play. It's when you focus on others that you can kind of frantically misplay in a way. I hope I answered your question correctly, Joe.
No, that's some good advice.
I think that's really good. I remember mom saying that to you.
Yeah. I want to hear your questions for Joe.
I have one more thing. I have one more thing to talk about a non-successful program or a non-successful team. And, dude, like you said, you were talking about it, Micah. It's all about personnel, too. I legit had a cokehead on my team when I was 18. I'm not even kidding, bro. This guy would come in, right? And he was, like, always blowing his nose. And he was, like, his dad was the freaking sheriff, too. He was crazy. He was going like 120 miles an hour. And I remember just seeing him pass me one time. He just has like a bong. I'm like, who is this kid? And Pacific Rim, we've always had very focused athletes. So like, this is new, right? And I was like, who this kid, man. And then like, I remember he'd have to leave for practice or whatever for a second in between practice. And he'd come back super energized. And I remember his nose was like.
His first couple serves, you got a radar up. It's like just clocks bonk. In at 89. 89. Jesus Christ. Throughout the practice, it gets to like 40, 30, 20.
No, and be like,
he's losing his juice.
And my mom was like the trainer and everything, and he'd be like, yeah, I think I got a cold because I was like, you know, I was like sinus problems and whatnot, and like nose problems. And then it finally hit me. I'm like,
nose is bleeding.
This guy's doing coke. Like what the? And this is the same guy that third set, we were facing your old setter, Adam Parks and the right side who was on your team for a while. Third set, right? Colin. They were like the top team in SoCal. And somehow we're just duking it out with them, right? Game three, 9-7.
This guy goes to the bathroom.
9-7. No.
Comes back. Oh, yeah. Rips six aces. He's baller. Like, guys, coach, Roger, I got a plan. Just give me 1 minute.
Like, keep in mind, it's the third set, so it's wearing off here, I guess.
He's calling his own timeouts. He's calling timeouts. Timeout! Timeout!
Medical timeout. I need my...
Timeout.
I need my Cocoa Puffs.
Your dad at this point just totally knows. He's like, yep, okay, timeout.
Dude, what you gotta do?
Do your thing.
I just didn't mean to say his name. I'm gonna bleep that out, probably. Actually, maybe I'll. Yeah, you should. Doesn't care. He doesn't care. So then...
He's his first.
Dude... So it was the third set, and 7-9, we're losing, and they're just literally triple block committee on me because I've been getting all our kills. He's front row. He's on the right side. We set him back there. There's no one there. He wails it, not to the far court, to the right court, to the court to our right. He wails it, and we're all just like looking at him, we're just like... And I live with one of my old teammates in Eric here, and we just die laughing about it the whole time. The crackhead wailed it to the far right court. He's like, my bad, guys, my bad. I'm like, what?
Like, that was on me, coach.
Like, got a little excited there.
Yeah. I was like,
wow.
I was like, yeah.
Wow, that ball is big.
Dude. I was like, dude, that was a good reminder. I was like, we were riding on a high. That I was like, yeah, that's who we are.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
A good reminder.
Yeah. Brings you back down.
But yeah, man, it's about personnel, man. Joe, man, I mean, you've asked all those questions. I mean, you've been, so far, people listening to this show have heard you're kind of up and down. Every place you go, you have to reprove yourself, height, and all this other stuff that goes into it. What would you give yourself, you know, could you go from a high-low perspective and situation very often? How would you, what advice would you give to people out there?
That's a really good question.
So it's not really about success. It is a little bit about success. Well, I think I've answered this question in a different way before, but you hit it like right on the point. Like for me, like everywhere I've gone, like it's just been that, like, start from the bottom, like literally Drake started from the bottom now here. But for me, it's like, I always am having to reprove myself, and it's always just as frustrating when you get, like, when you're at the bottom again. Like, I mean, I literally every single time, like, you're there, it's just as frustrating for the same reasons, but it makes it, like, I can't tell you, like, my senior year at UH, how hard I worked and how hard our team worked, and just, like, makes every, like, the Big West Championship, it made everything feel so good, but it also made that national championship loss hurt so bad because of how far we've come. And I think it's the same thing, like, whether it's in the national team gym or now here in the club or wherever it is, even in high school, I had my high school coaches talking to people. I never to me directly, but people that I know telling them, like, there's no way this kid ever plays front row, like, anywhere past like eighth grade volleyball and stuff. That's the stuff they were saying, my own coaches. And so for me, it's the success part of it, like, I've never taken anything for granted, and that's so cliche to say, but, like, I really cannot at all. Like, any opportunity that I get, any chance that I get to prove myself or play or whatever, like, I have to always be ready, and it frustrates me when I see people take stuff for granted all the time. I think, like, I've had teammates that, like, I'm just like, dude, like, this guy should be so good, and he just wastes it because, like, he's never had to, like, work for much in his life. I think, like, we've talked about it before, the way us three were raised, and I think anybody could say, so the way I was raised, but literally, like, the way us three were raised, some of the stories from whether it's our coaches or our parents, and how they dealt with us and the way that they deal with, like, it's literally like they'll throw you in the fire and you have to learn from it, and you have to be accountable for yourself, and you have to be able to speak for yourself. And for me, that's been, I've had some like really powerful lessons, and I think it's helped me in the long run. I think parents have to be able to let their kids fail in a way. I mean, I would say there's some times and some seasons that I had that were just complete failures, and like moments in my life where it's just like, yeah, that was just not a good decision, that didn't end up well. And for me, those moments are the ones that make, like, when you do get to the top. And for me, like, Hawaii, when I did become the starting setter, just made it that much sweeter. When I was like that senior year, I think that run we had, it just made everything like that much better. Just knowing from where I was at, like my freshman and sophomore year, where there's points where I was even like thinking about transferring to find a better situation because I just like wasn't happy. But my parents have always been the ones that are like behind me, like, no, your ass is staying there and you're going to grind it out. And that's kind of the mentality I've always had in anywhere I go. I don't know if you want me to answer anything else there, Gage.
I mean, I didn't even know you were going to think about transferring. It's news to me.
Dude, heavy, heavy fret, like end of freshman year, like, maybe not end of freshman year. I'm trying to think of the exact. There was definitely times I had conversations.
Where?
With my mother and father. I had no idea. I mean, I was still like thinking, well, maybe I should have played libero, blah, 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 because it seemed like even Charlie wasn't that confident in having me set. I'm like that was the one coach that said he had confidence, but in. At the end of the day, I think everything worked out. Is like I worked my ass off over the summers. Gage knows, like, we worked out like crazy in the weight room and on the court.
I'll tell you one thing, bro. You were when I was my end of my going into my sophomore year, dude. You were brutal towards me. I mean, brutal.
Well, dude. Dude, that was just pent up. Like for me, that was like pent up. Just like. I was so motivated, and I was just, like, wanted to win so bad and be successful so bad that when I saw you slack and stuff, it just pissed me off, like, because I know, like, how pissed I was at Hawaii for so long, and that made me pissed, like, when I thought that you weren't giving, like, 100%, like, it just drove me nuts, and, like, and I'll even say this, like, your sophomore year, when you came in, like, I knew that coming in, you had a really good shot at playing, like, way earlier than me, and I don't know if you thought that way, too, but it seemed like it, and for me, it's like, dude, this guy has to learn how to freaking grind and push, and like he's not going to just be handed. And I think you've attested this. Like the first year at Hawaii really, I think, benefited you in the experience you had in terms of like playing time and stuff. I think that benefited you more than anything for now this part of your career.
Okay, I'm going to quote you here, Joe, on some of the quotes that you gave me over the summer. I remember I'd be sucking, right? Or maybe I wasn't doing my best. And you'd be like, I can't wait till Charlie benches you. He's like, you're gonna be like, you're gonna get cut.
So
gonna dude, be, he was like, you're gonna get cut. You're gonna get benched. They're gonna take away your scholarship.
Dude, I've never said you were gonna get cut.
You did. All right. Oh, no, but you said that. You said that what? I was gonna get my scholarship taken away. They're like, you're gonna get your scholarship taken away.
My God.
All the days. He was brutal. He's like, I can't wait till he benches you.
Joe's poor son. I don't know about how you're going to be with your daughter, but your poor
Gage, there's
son
no
is going to be.
Way I said.
Oh, my God.
I promise you,
dude, I could
see.
Okay, I will say this. Gage, I will say this. I could see myself saying that. Like, you're
Joe,
at, like, because I knew Tui
mean.
Was there and stuff. Bro,
yeah,
I would never say he's going to take your scholarship away.
Dude, you did.
He's
I
not mean to a lot of people.
You.
I've seen him
why
be mean
would
to
I,
you.
Joe, why would I lie about that? There's no reason for me. I promise you, Joe. I remember the exact time. And there was a Northgate libero that just transferred to us. And he was like, all right. He's like, yeah. He's like, he's going to start over you when I wasn't playing well, like, all that other stuff. And you were just like, brutal.
Yeah.
Lethal.
Yeah, he's gonna start over you, baby.
You ever seen that? You ever seen that? Like, clapping his hands. The Family Guy, the horsekin man is like, oh yeah, yeah. He's gonna start. That reminds me of right there, Micah. Joe, you were brutal to me, and I don't know if it was part of your grand plan. And I don't know if your grand plan is what's happening.
Yeah, I think you put words. I could see myself like being like, your ass is gonna be on the bench. I could see myself saying that. Cutting, Joe, like, that just doesn't even make sense.
Cutting, no.
I would never, I never think. Cutting, yeah, exactly.
Joe,
so already I broke your alibi here. You're already starting to break down. Joe, I didn't say, I never said cutting.
I remember when you said the scholarship. It was at Pac Rim. I wasn't playing well. And you and Rada were brutal. I remember our relationship wasn't even that good going into our sophomore year. And then I was like, I kind of went through a little depression, but I never shared with you or told you because you were right. I would just absolutely just dick on me. So I didn't say anything to you guys. I was like, just wait till the season happens, just start playing well, and just keep grinding. But yeah, I mean,
and then the antenna serve happened.
No, that was before. That was before. This is going to my sophomore year.
Dude, Michael, was that against you?
Yeah, it was. It was. It was.
Oh my gosh, dude.
That was the year before.
Oh my. Yeah.
But if Joe's ever, quote unquote.
Dude, Gage, okay, the thing was though, okay, you were pissing me off so much with just how lackadaisically. Like, I was, you don't understand, like,
after
how frustrated. Like,
you can look at the
dude,
practice. I was
going into your,
super
Gage,
hard at
going in. Bro, going into a senior year, you're like, all right, this is literally like the last shot you have. And I remember you were just dragging your ass. I was just so pissed off with you in practice. I remember that 100%. And I was saying, I was so mad. I'm like, dude, this, like, it was so frustrating for me because it just, like, you got to admit, when I get mad at you, you kind of like back off and you like, you'll just walk away times. Like, you won't confront me about things sometimes.
Yeah, no need.
And so when I was getting in your face and you were doing that pissed me off because I want to see you like fight a little bit. That's what I want to see. That's what in a winning culture.
I'm so glad that the podcast is now seeing this relationship. Just how intense these two people are.
Joe, that is
Gage is a lot.
Well, you go. Sorry,
people think. Well, just people think, I'm sure, from the outside, because the way you play, that Gage is a lot more intense than Joe. But Joe is. I have some questions for Joe for sure about just like. Man, this guy is intense, man. He is intense.
Joe, that was the summer we actually fist fought and we had to be separated. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
During ladders.
A lot
we
of
were
people
on each other.
I don't know.
We fist fought,
yeah.
And it was fun to Rado, and it was fun to all the club, some of the club teams.
Oh,
like,
dude.
Like club teammates.
We there. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we
literally
fist fought.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we had to be
that
separated,
was that summer. Yeah.
Then,
I forgot about
that.
So yeah,
tensions were high. All right, I will admit. That sophomore summer, I could come in lackadaisical. But when it came to practicing, I did work my ass off in practice. I was going hard on practice.
Going into
that sophomore.
I remember being very frustrated with.
No. In the summer, 100%. 100%. I agree.
And that's what we're talking about right now.
Yeah, but I'm talking about when I went through depression and I couldn't talk to you about anything, dude. That was preseason of
that's probably
year.
Why you're coming in like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt like sometimes like there's only some certain amount of people I could talk to or whatever, and I'm not gonna go over to Joe and be like, yeah, I'm just not feeling good. Like, shut up and get on the court. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, like, Joe's not the guy.
And
Joe,
I think,
Joe would be the worst psychologist almost of all time. I can think of a few that are. Probably on his level. Could you imagine someone coming in with depression to Joe? And like the advice he would give people?
Joe, you had to have going through something like that. Like where you're like down on yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, for sure. No,
in the face until he stops being sad.
Dude, I used to punch myself in the face?
Yeah.
My dad had to like tell me to stop doing that. In matches, I would punch myself in the face.
All right, but Joe, don't make it sound like when people just hear that, they just think you're just like wailing. Not like that.
Yeah,
like
you would just
punch.
You would just punch yourself like this.
No, dude, they
can't see that.
No.
Oh yeah. So. Well, could you just imagine what I was doing?
Dude, no, it was pretty hard. Like I would like punch myself pretty hard.
Yeah,
I was
do
so
that.
Mad at myself. Dude, that's, I just get too intense. Like, my dad, when I was, like, first started playing, 7, 8 years old, every time we lost, I would be bawling, I'd be throwing, like, temper, I was so, my dad really had to work on that with us.
Do you want to know something funny? My dad told me I used to cry for the other team.
Wow, you're such a good guy, Rika.
No, I just think that's funny. Like, usually kids are crying, them? Like, because they're losing. And my dad said, like, when I would win and we would win by a lot, like, as a small kid, he said I would, like, tear up and be so sad and be, like, heartbroken for the other team.
Just let him win, then.
I'm sorry, please.
No, but
please forgive me.
I mean, I would compete super hard, and then after, I'd be like, oh, I'm so sorry.
So, now, hopefully you guys gotten in the mindset. We talked about a lot of things, a lot of juicy information there. Yeah,
that went all over the place.
Yeah, it was. But hopefully you guys got a lot of information coming out of that. I want to kind of go to our last subject here. This is a question for both Joe and Micah here. What do people, if people want to go into the profession of playing volleyball for a significant amount of time, what do people have to understand on the court, off the court, your schedule, and any other facets of it? I want to start with Joe here, and then Micah. Hop over to Micah.
I mean, I think professional volleyball, the biggest emphasis is on your performance on match day. And that's the one thing I tell people. It's like your job, they're paying you to win. They're at the end of the day, they're paying you to win matches. And if you're winning matches, I've always said this, winning fixes everything. Team issues with the coach, whatever it is, winning fixes everything. when you're losing, then the kind of things get nitpicky and they start questioning things like that don't usually matter. But at the end of the day, professional volleyball, like your life is surrounded around match, your performance in matches at the end of the day and how you perform there. So you can show up and as long as you're performing well in matches, like if you don't practice a couple of days, like it doesn't matter that much for the club. You just have to make sure that you're performing the matches because, like I said, if you're not playing well in the matches and you're not practicing and you have health issues and you're a bad teammate, then the club's going to start having a lot of issues with you. Mike, I don't know about you, like your kind of perception on that or some other advice you have.
No, in terms of playing, I think you're probably – it's definitely more emphasis on match day than college or, like, clubs. And definitely winning fixes everything, 100% it does. People are just in better moods. They just let – like, if you're, like, a minute late, they'll just let it slide. And when you're losing, if you're, like, 10 seconds late, they're, like, on you about literally everything. I think winning fixes everything, I think – and I think match day is definitely the most important. So, yeah, I agree with you there.
What about, like, off time, though? I mean, you guys are always having off time. Like, what's your schedule throughout the day?
Depends on the day. Like, for us, we...
On a normal practice day.
We have ball. We lift in the morning. Usually sometimes have some sort of, like, individual, like, reps right after that. So, like, 2 hours in the morning, two and a half hours in the morning. We have about 6 hours in between. We usually start training between 3:30 and 4:30, and go about 2 hours there. But I mean, those times can fluctuate depending on the time of the year, how many matches we have, how many guys we have healthy, and yeah, like I said, match days are totally different. But for the most part, that's kind of our typical schedule.
And for us, we lift in the morning, but we don't lift at our gym. So, wait, Joe, do you lift at your gym or no?
No, we don't. We have an agreement with the local, like, gym, public gym.
So you lift and then drive to the gym and then and then get reps? Wow,
yeah,
we don't do that.
Exactly.
We lift and then we practice in the afternoon. So it's kind of like college, honestly. It's like lift in the morning for like an hour and a half probably on average. And then practice in the afternoon for like 2.5. We practice in the afternoon
right
pretty
on.
Long. But, yeah, you have some free time. You have to be good at being alone. You have to be, like, creative, especially during this quarantine or whatever this is called, lockdown. Because you really are alone. Like, it's like I feel for the people that are in, like, New York City in, like, a one-bedroom apartment with not going to work. because that's probably pretty tough. But yeah, you just have to be good on your own. You just have to be able to find hobbies. It's honestly really a really like sick position to be in, because you have time to invest in the other things that you want to learn, or you want to, like, if you want to do a side thing, like if you guys want to do out of system, you have time to go and film. You have time to learn about, to watch YouTube videos and learn about whatever you want to learn on. I'm trying to learn guitar and like trying to make music. So you have time. It's not a straight 9 to 5 where you get home and you're just exhausted and like your whole day is spent up. You have time in the morning, you have time in the middle of the day, and then you have time at the end. So just using that time to your advantage. Obviously, there's some sacrifices you make. You're not around your family. You're not in the U.S. and like all that kind of good stuff that does go on when you're like in your early 20s and you're working or like around a lot of friends or a lot of people that are your age. But at the same time, yeah, you get to make money. You don't spend a lot of money. And then you get to like find a hobby and at least from a financial standpoint, kind of try and find a side, another income. And yeah, you get to learn a lot. You just get to learn a lot if you choose to do so. So that's my favorite part of the job, is like having time for myself.
Do you, you see a lot of people who don't make it. Why do you think, I mean, people like that with their mindset or whatnot, why do you see the people, and there's a handful of people out there who quit after maybe a year or two, or people that want to pursue it. I'm not just going to say people who were like, okay, I'll try it for a year or two, but people who want to pursue it but just couldn't make it. Why do you guys?
Yeah, I was going to say, because there are people that are like, oh, I'll play, and then like, because it is like free travel. Like, it's like you got to, after college, you get to experience a different part of the world, and like people do that anyways, and you get your stuff paid for, and you get to continue playing volleyball, and then you get to like go into the real working world, which a lot of my friends have done. I think finances, loneliness, pressure, performance, those are all probably pretty important things and all reasons why people have stopped before. Joe?
No, I think you hit on the point. Like, some people are just, they're preset, like, on the, they preset before they even start. Like, I'm just going to go for a couple of years, like you said, travel. The other thing is that, dude, there's so many guys who come out of, like, super good universities that could make so much money working for like Google or Twitter or like,
yeah, that
for, like, other companies where they make so much money, and it just makes sense. That's the other thing about like professional athletes here. The American athletes and the athletes that go play at the universities in the U.S. are the only ones who have college degrees coming directly out of their professional careers. And so like these guys, there's these American 100%. Athletes are sitting here. If they're like in like medium level leagues, it's like, how long do you really want to sit there making, I don't know, like really average pay?
Yeah, that's a big part of it too, is that we all have like, well, most of us have degrees and have other options, and like a lot of these other guys are like, I am a volleyball player and I'm going to do this until I can't, and hopefully after that I never need to work again. But they don't really have a lot of other options. They really don't.
And so it's interesting because the Europeans, they don't, like, they've asked, a lot of people ask me, like, they don't understand why the Americans just, like, stop playing after 2 or 3 years. I'm like, these guys are making 5 to, like, 7 times the amount of money sometimes just going back home. Like, they're making so much more money. I know some of the guys, like, the companies they go and work for. And so for us, like, I don't know. So I understand, like, from, like, for their viewpoint and how they want their life to go, like, I understand that. And it's hard for certain European guys to understand that. And I understand from their viewpoint why that is hard to understand, because it's just such a culture thing, and it's hard for them to kind of understand why they would do that. So, I don't know.
Yeah, that's both sides.
That's kind of how I feel. But, yeah, I mean, I want to move on here, kind of the advice section, but I think we hit a lot of really good topics today. I think a lot of people have been asking about that stuff. I'm glad we kind of got around to that eventually. Sometimes we take a while to get to things that people DM. We'll like we'll respond to DMs like, yeah, we'll get right on that. And then literally, like, I just had somebody reply to us saying from 6 months ago about advice, and I'm like, finally we're getting to it today. I totally forgot about it on other shows, and so, but today we're finally getting to it. But let's just hit it right here. We got advice. We got some DMs. Again, if you want us, we put it up on our story a lot of times. So submit or just DM us We'll make sure to get to you guys. Anything you guys want advice on from us, I don't know how you might want to take it with a grain of salt, some of the advice you're getting. We'll give you advice on anything, though. Anything possible you want, we'll give you advice on.
But yeah, throw in some random ones.
The first DM here we have is from a guy. His YouTube account is so big, and he posts all the – I think he might live in Santa Barbara because he's always posting Santa Barbara games.
Oh, I know
this guy, like, he gets beast. Millions of views on
Moo Moo Cow Johnny.
The guy's name is Moo Moo Cow Johnny. And he DM'd us 6 months ago. He was asking about, like, setters who, like, look across the net before they set and how they're trained to do that and why they do that, what they're looking at. And we have two setters on the podcast here, so, I mean – I know I was trained from
when yeah,
I was
Joe, trained let me take this one. It's because I'm just kidding. Sorry. The last
guy you want. Now Mike and I might have two totally different viewpoints on this. But that's good. We can discuss that. For me, I know that I was trained by my dad from a young age to do this. This is something like it's more from a deceptive standpoint than anything. And you have to be the first thing, especially the higher level you go, location is the utmost important thing. And then comes deception, because if you're deceptive but you're throwing the ball under the net, it doesn't really matter.
There's no block up. I couldn't hit that. I'm sorry.
But also, to a point, if it's like really deceptive and there is like literally no block and it's just like an average ball, I feel like hitters should be able to score that ball. Like, 100%. There's, like, a balance in there.
There's definitely a balance.
It's like, dude, you make, like, an athletic play, and you get a guy, and there's, like, huge opening. Like, there's balls that I feel like they have to score, and it doesn't have to be perfect in that situation. But, I mean, so, in the setters, back to what Moo Moo Cow Johnny was saying here.
Moo Moo.
The setters are looking... I know that I was always trained, and I train like younger kids. You're looking at the middle. The game's always between you and the middle as a setter. You're trying to get the most optimal position you can put your hitter in is no blocks up. The next best is, and the most realistic at the higher levels you go, is just single block. So in perfect situations, you should be able to get your hitters in single block or like one and a half kind of block situations for the most part. And you're looking for kind of if the middle blocker's cheating or if he's committing or like there's... The higher level you go, the more complicated it is because the middles are better at disguising it. Like when I was 15 years old, the middles, you just go and stand somewhere and it's really, and they can't move much, so it's really obvious to read. But like now, like middles know that you're like looking at them, and so they'll show something, go a different way, they'll show something and jump. They'll do they do all kinds of different stuff. Mike, I don't know what you have to say about that.
No, yeah, I think Joe does this a lot more than me. I don't really do it too often. Because I think also because I'm not a naturally trained setter. I wasn't, like, raised with just this setting mentality of, like, playing a game. Mine was just like, okay, just give a good hittable ball. That's all my dad taught me. And that's all my coach taught me. It was just like, okay, just give the same hittable ball and let them do all the work.
Is that still your mentality?
At times, yes, and at times, no.
What do you mean? It's the game of inches, Micah.
But I definitely have, like, I use it mostly on just the gap. So when people are running a 3 or a 7 or a gap, whatever you call that set, that's when I think it's pretty important to, like, have an idea of what the middle is doing. And it's the most movement that you can, like, see. Like, okay, he clearly stepped to the gap. I can step back. Or, okay, he's right next to me. Like, he's not catching up to this. Because the gap is a first tempo set. So,
yeah.
I definitely use it on that. I don't turn my whole head. But I definitely am, like, my focus now shifts to, like, being on the opposite blocker, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
On a straight up one, I just do a lot of just feeling. Because a lot of times people aren't, like, just dipping to go anywhere. When it's a one, usually they're just right in front of me. And they're not doing a whole lot, so I don't get a lot from looking at that. So then I'm just like focused on my presentation and trying to be deceptive in a little bit of a different way. I've always tried to be deceptive. Well, no, I've tried to be deceptive recently through just being super simple, just always being the same, and getting the ball out fast so that, one, they don't get any read, and two, they almost feel like they have to guess because the ball is gone and then they're not catching it.
Yeah.
And I've found a lot of success like that. I actually, like, am a lot more deceptive by just being really technical and simple.
Yes.
Than if I'm, like, trying to do all this fancy stuff, like, and then there's, like, a double block there. I'm like, what the hell am I doing this for? So I had to stop doing that. There's some setters that are completely like that. Like, Josh Tuaniga can just fling that thing around and can be super deceptive. I think you're probably a lot more closer to Josh than I am, where you can kind of fling that thing around too. I just watch you and just like,
I mean,
that thing's gone.
He just has the hands too.
I just need to be a little bit more simple and like clean about it. That's where my deception is starting to come from, which has been a recent addition to my game, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's feel. I don't know how, but you just feel it and you just make the decision when you're playing good, even when you're not, but like, most times when you're playing, you just make a choice and you're like, oh, that was the right choice. But I'm not thinking about it while I'm, you know, it's just natural. And you just make it based off like, oh, I feel the flow of the game's going this way. Maybe I can reverse it and just stuff like that.
Yeah. And when you're playing your best, I mean, that's ultimately like you're feeling everything. You deserve, that's the best. You're just making the right decision. Your hitter's just bouncing all night.
People are just teeing off. You're just like, damn, we are good.
And then you have sometimes where it feels like, dude, we freaking suck. We can't hit a ball.
That's the thing. If you're struggling, it's the worst position to be, is a center. Everyone relies on you.
That's debatable.
No, Gage, get out of here.
What do you mean? Get out of here.
That's not debatable.
I can have the game of my life.
That's not even close to being debatable.
I can't even.
The libero will not serve. Gage.
Are you talking about you?
The libero will not get blamed for a loss.
Wait.
The libero will not get blamed for a loss.
Okay.
The libero will not get blamed for a loss.
He's talking about on the court, worst position.
No. I'm saying when you're struggling, it's the worst position to be in. If you're a struggling libero, people can pinch your seams. They can step you out. You can just try and take a couple off the net, and it's going to be okay.
How many serves off the net are you getting?
No. You can bring the ball off the net and pass it to 10 feet.
Okay, but you're still – I mean
– Okay, but if you're a setter, it is the worst position to be when you are struggling and you're like, God, I'm not feeling it right now. Because everyone is like waiting on you to be still like right there and be good, and everyone's reliant on you.
Yeah, but if you get served every time, especially as a libero, and you're – let's say in my position, right, you are the man you're supposed to be like – you're supposed to be – holding the serve receive together, and you go down, guess who's going down with you? The rest of the serve receivers who are depending on you with your comfort.
Not
yes.
necessarily.
Yes.
For me, in my position,
except for Colton, that's kind of how it is a lot of the time for me. And also, let's say I could have 30 digs. I could have 100 digs. That doesn't mean we're still going to win. You could go back there and start cracking some serves, and you have options to score. You could block, you could dump, and you could serve. We're having three different conversations.
I'm not talking about impact on the game. I'm talking about the worst position to be in when you're struggling. Because when you're struggling, you're not thinking like, oh, nice, I get to go back and rip some serves. You're like, okay, I should probably be like, keep this one in.
Yeah, but you still have the option to.
Okay, and you still have the option to pass perfectly.
Yeah, but I can't score off that.
No, but you wouldn't be blamed.
You can generate
have a good
points.
Game. But you'd have a good game. And people wouldn't like... People rely on you so much as a setter that if you're the one struggling, you feel it the most. There's no person that's going to come in and set a second ball that's, okay, you pass the ball good. It's not like I can be like, oh, can you come in and set this ball for me?
Yeah,
like,
but
no,
your hitter's
still
adjusted.
I set every ball.
If you have a good hitter,
pass
I mean,
every
it's fine
ball.
Then. I mean, if you have a hitter, I mean, then I'd say, if you have a good hitter, I would kind of argue that. I mean, you can just put it up to him. We've had this argument before.
People miss serves. People don't hit you every single serve. We set at, like, all day long.
Okay.
We do it every time that we get the ball, we have to set.
Okay.
That's not the case for you passing. That's not the case for a hitter hitting.
Yeah, but if you're struggling, I have two ways I can do well. I can pass or I can dig. And if I'm, those are my only two ways if I'm struggling. You have multiple ways.
I see what you're saying.
Four or five different ways to kind of other. Like, they're like, outside hitter. Okay, I'm not doing well. Do some other well. If I'm not passing well, I'm like, I guess I can try and dig. I mean, that's about it. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's only two things
that
I can impact
the game. Your job is to pass. But at the same time, our job is to set.
100%.
So it's like, if you're not setting well, like, that's your job.
Yeah, but you see a lot of other setters who are put in the game, not that are, they have a set, better setter, but they can block better. They can serve better. They can do other stuff better than that.
Anyways, Joe, you're going to help me out here or what?
Bro, I'm 100% on your side. Liberos,
of course,
like,
of course.
Liberos will, setters will get the blame.
And keep in mind, like, Joe has played libero.
I will say that you guys, yeah, for like, for. And he hated it. He doesn't embrace the libero-ness.
Exactly.
No, but he's been a libero in a national team.
Okay, but still, I mean, so I'm not going to...
You've never been a setter.
True, but I can tell. I mean, I've been with a lot of setters where I can tell, okay, you can impact the game.
Gage.
When you're a setter, you'll see.
Gage, it sucks being a libero when you're losing 100%, but the amount of pressure, the amount of... like reliance on the setter, like the libero,
I'll say this,
the most will not get just blamed for stuff.
100%. I think, well, I don't know about that, especially Milan. Because if you have such a big part of
Gage,
the team, like
no.
Myself. No, let me say. I will admit, when you're struggling as a team, like let's say continuous losses or continuous, you will get blamed more. But I'm saying, struggling wise, frustration wise, there's nothing worse than when your team is sucking. And you're a libero. There is, you can't do anything. You can't score a point. You can only impact the game in one way. And you
no,
can
yeah,
pass
I agree with
time.
That. I'm not disagreeing with that. But that's not my point.
So explain your point.
One
my more
point
time
is
so
not,
I can hear.
When the team is sucking, what position would I want to be the least? My point is, when you are sucking, what position would you want to be the least?
Okay.
And when I am sucking and I'm playing the worst I've ever played, the worst position for me to be in is to be the setter.
Okay, that's fair. I'll admit that.
That's all of it. No, that's the argument I've been making.
But it's frustrating.
I totally agree with you. All right,
next question here.
I totally agree with you. Sucks to be a libero when your team is not doing well.
It's true. Unless you hit the A ball. All right. Good thing we got that out of the air. All right, Joe. Next question here.
All right, this is a content question from Ali Sadam. I might have pronounced that wrong. I don't know. Gage, he was asking about... This isn't really advice, right? But it was a good question, I think, for you. People, he's like, I've always wanted to see a mic'd up version of volleyball. Any chance we're seeing one of those coming? That's definitely a question for Gage to see about his technological advancements. I don't know. Maybe in the future.
Knowledge, Joe. My knowledge.
And so, your advancements. And your,
I'm
your
not advancing any tech. Anyway. So here, I've looked into this a while, right? I've looked into it. So first thing I looked into, I was like, NBA and NFL, how do they do mic'd up, right? Because you can't just have – so usually when you have a personal mic, what happens is you'll have like a box like where it kind of records. I don't know the exact name for it. You have a wire, and then you put it right here. And that's and then you have your camera ones where you plug into your camera. But if you want like a portable one, you just have the thing that records everything. But obviously you don't want to be playing volleyball with that because of the impact and whatnot and just – not very practical. So then I was like, okay, how do NFL and NBA players do it? And I looked into this, and they have a wireless, personal mic. Or not a wireless, but they have a small wire, and they have a small box. And what they do, they tape it on your body. And I forgot what the name was, and I looked into it, and you can't really find a lot about it. But it costs around like $1,000, around there dollars. Now, in the future. I would love to do this because I've definitely looked into that. But at the same time, it's like, okay, then you got to have a camera in there because you can't just have like a mic'd up version, just like this is the audio. You know what I'm saying?
No visual.
Like you need like to have a camera in there, right? And I don't work for University of Hawaii. I work for Out of System. So now you're faced with a dilemma of, hey Charlie, I'm coming in there with cameras. Now you got that's another coronavirus thing, right? You
hey Chuck, I'm mic'd up.
Yeah.
Hey. I want you to know I'm gonna have a full film crew.
Like you can't like that's where it kind of gets dicey because then all of a sudden let's say if it's good, University of Hawaii's gonna be like, hey, we want to do this or kick you out of the gym or something like that. Or there's always like this, like here's a problem when you're a beach player. This is why there's so many beach volleyball accounts. It's because you work for yourself. You have your own access, right? I will never be playing for myself. I'll be playing for an organization, or I will be playing for a university. I play for University of Hawaii. I'll play for an organization, professional volleyball. So I can't just be like, okay, I'm going to mic myself up this game. I got to be like, hey, I got to ask permission. I got to, hey,
you could secretly do it.
I could secretly do it, but then if the club sees it, then they're not going to be too happy about it. Be like, coach, don't say that, I'm mic'd up. Or he sees this tape on my body, but, oh yeah, I'm mic'd up, by the way. Like, that's not
something. You just put it out, and if they say something, like, oh, I was supposed to tell you guys about that?
Dude, it is not. I will be looking into it.
No, it's going to be super hard, no, for sure.
Eventually, that's the one thing, I'll keep this short, but that's the one thing when we started this, I was like, I want to give access to the indoor volleyball, right, that the beach volleyball kids, you know what I'm saying? So I'm trying to, right now, I'm trying to get good ties with all the, I mean, not that they don't. We love each other, right? The staff, and trying to make remain good ties with everyone in Hawaii. So I can give you that kind of access. But to long story short, that's kind of why it's basically a lot of logistics going into it. And right now, it's not the best time to do it. But we will eventually.
In the future, back to the future. All right, next question, really quickly. Let's answer this one. We have two more things we'll hit, and then we'll wrap it up. We had a guy go with, I think his college team, I'm going to guess, went to Brazil, trained with a couple of professional teams, and he said how a lot of Brazilian professional coaches are speaking about how there's six available options to hitters before the ball set. Line, deep 5-6 seam, roll the ball. I mean, there's way more than this. Already reading to this, there's way more than six. Like, he's like just talking about every single seam. And he's asking, after the set, options begin to narrow down just because of the block and where the set is, the height of the set, location of the set. If we want to, and asking if we can speak or give advice to attackers about this. I guess I'll start this off, and then I'll let you guys kind of comment quickly. The biggest thing is that, yeah, of course, the area, the location of the set and the block will 100% determine, like, will limit where you're able to hit the ball, and also your own abilities. I mean, you've got to kind of know your own abilities, and you've got to be, obviously, as a professional athlete, you have to have a little more range because the blockers get more complex and they get more experienced. Defense systems get more complex. And so the biggest shot at a professional level, the biggest shot you have to do, you have to be able to play with the block, off the block, reset in the block. That's the, like, at the professional level, those are the, I think, the biggest steps attackers have to be able to make. Learning how to hit block out is so instrumental because there's way more, the serves are coming way faster. You're setting the ball out of system way more. And so you have to be able to use the block to your advantage, whether it's resetting it so you can cover it or scoring off the block. Those are the biggest things I think you have to be able to do. Micah.
So the question is just like helping attackers.
It's just like advice, options? Like on attackers. Like our I think it's more like our opinion on attackers. And is it if we believe that attackers' options are limited after the ball is set, and so which I think is just true in general. I mean,
yeah, for sure.
I think I kind of touch bases on most things.
Yeah, there. I think I really like your point about the block out. Hitters are so good at that, and you don't get a chance to dig. Like, you just hit the block and it's out, and it's just okay. Yeah. That's a point. Like, so it's and resetting the ball, going high into the block, going to the sides of the block. That's super super important. As well as, do I think when you set the ball, obviously there's gonna be things you shouldn't do with it. and you shouldn't, and people like at the higher levels are just so good at managing their swings. If the ball is like tight or if the ball's off, they kind of know what to do. And I think that just comes from experience and from watching and from learning. And as an attacker, I would watch like an undersized player play at the highest level. I think probably, and then watch a player that's very similar to you. Those are two things that you should be doing. And just see how they get certain balls, see how they put away balls, see how they try even, like, they get bad situations and they're not trying to put away the ball. They're trying to do something different with it, whatever that means. Maybe it's take the setter out, or maybe it's play it back into the block, or all those kinds of interesting things that they do. I would say watch a lot and learn that way, and then don't be afraid to try it.
Yeah. Probably, yeah. I mean, there's the best hitters in the world. There's just some guys you just can't defend against at times. Like, you just got to hope that they're not on.
Yeah.
But, all right, wrap it up. I'll let Gage wrap it up like he usually does. But really quickly, we're not doing pick 'em this week. Dude, everybody, there's so many matches right now that just keep getting postponed. Leagues are suspended. I was just going through. There wasn't a ton of, like, really big matches. So we're going to skip the pick 'em for this week. Gage, again, is just crushing. I think I made up some ground, actually, after last week. I have to go through and tally that. Really quick, we had another DM before I turn it to Gage. This guy's just absolutely throwing low blows to us.
That guy.
This guy, Ryan Gold, he was like, I was listening to your newest episode and realized that every single one of you all lost to the same team in the national championship. Frickin' TJ is what he said. And I said, yeah, exactly. I said, he was asking.
Guy's a beast. That team was an incredible team.
Yeah, it's...
Josh,
leaves a bad taste.
Kyle, TJ, two really good middles. Good libero, good OH too. Yeah, it's a good team.
It's good coach. Team.
We all played TJ though, when we were together.
Yeah,
we did
beat him then.
We did do that. We did play TJ as Pac Rim.
Rumors.
Pac Rim.
Now there's also another guy. One other shout out before we end it here. There's another guy who's been on commenting on all our YouTube videos how we suck and whatnot. I just like to give show some love.
Dude, does that guy wants to come on?
Right on to that guy. Right on. What's that guy's name?
He said the last time we played together was like in like 2016. I was like, it was literally this like 2 summers ago when we played together. The last available summer where we could play together. It's the summer we all played together.
But dude, if that guy wants to come on, have him DM us. If some guy wants to throw some shade, we should get him on here.
Yeah.
Absolutely obliterate him.
See if this guy can handle the heat. See if this guy can handle the heat, bro.
No respect to you. I love those guys.
Big just respect. Big shade. Up yourself. Another OG quote right there. So, we've had fun. Boys, you've been phenomenal. It is an honor filming alongside you guys, boys. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope all the leagues are still going. Joe, I know you got a new gym. Hopefully, we get a video.
Dude, big time matchup against Berlin this weekend.
Yep.
Hey. So
we're going to post it. We're going to post the link, yeah.
Yeah, we'll have the link. Well, yeah, we'll have the information about the link. Mikey, you play this weekend.
Yeah, I play Taylor Averill. I play Ken.
Woo! That's a big time matchup for you guys.
Yep. We play tomorrow night.
All right. Well, the French league, unfortunately, Saturday, 2 p.m. It's a televised game, so it's in the middle of the day. But we'll be posting the links for both of our matches. Unfortunately, the French league you have to pay. But anybody interested in getting a subscription for the French league, we'll post how you can watch that game, how you can watch our game against Berlin. And yeah. Hell yeah.
And this is brought to you by Simplify.
Simplify.
By Ben White at the Out of System channel.
Now, well, you guys be playing big games. I'll be playing big game at Fortnite, so. Yeah, lucky me. So, this has been another episode of If You Can't Handle the Heat, presented by Out of System.